And just a brief introduction here before we get started. For those of you who aren't that familiar with Dr. Judith Leichenberg-Ullman, she's been in homeopathic practice since 1984, having graduated both from naturopathic medical school as well as the IFH professional course, and attending seminars with George Lathokis, Paul Hershey, Lou Klein, Jeremy Scherer, and other homeopathic practitioners over that time, in particular intensively studying since 1993 with Rajan Sankaran and Divya Chhabra of Bombay. She's the past president of the International Foundation for Homeopathy and the past vice president of the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians. One way that you're probably very familiar with Dr. Leichenberg-Ullman and Dr. Ullman is through their many books and articles, too numerous to mention at this point in time, but some of my favorites being Ritalin-Free Kids, Prozac-Free, Rage-Free Kids, and several others. And of course, for years, writing homeopathic articles every 2 months in the Townsend Letter. Are you folks still doing that, Judith?
We are. We are still doing it.
Well, I remember reading and just waiting every issue for those articles back in the 90s. So you folks are real troopers here in writing those for all these many years.
We have. It is interesting writing a column, you know, the same column for so many years. But, yep, we still do it.
And the voice actually that you're not hearing this evening as yet is Dr. Robert Ullman. He's also a licensed naturopathic physician, and he's been in practice since 1982, also board certified in homeopathy by the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians. And he is actually a vice president of the International, a past vice president of the International Foundation for Homeopathy, and also a previous board member of the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians, also studying with many of the same practitioners as Dr. Leichenberg-Ullman, Jeremy Scherer, Lou Klein, Paul Hershey, as well as intensive work since the mid-90s with Jaya Shah and Rajan Sankaran and Divya Chhabra of Bombay, and co-author as well with some of the same books, Ritalin-Free Kids, Prozac-Free, Homeopathic Self-Care, Rage-Free Kids. Welcome him this evening when he later comes on the phone with Judith. And then our third speaker this evening is Dr. Ian Lupker, who is a 2002 graduate of naturopathic school and is also a certified homeopath from the Homeopathic Academy of Naturopathic Physicians, actually in practice since the fall of 2002, working in the office of Judith and Robert, seeing his own patients as well as sitting in with their patients since that time for the last 2.5 years. I just really want to thank all of you for joining us on this call this evening. I know that between your busy, busy practice and the many books and articles that you write and just all the work that you folks have done over the years for homeopathy, I just really want to thank you. Can't thank you enough, actually, for taking the time out from your busy schedule. I think you said something to me today, Judith, about you're going to, is it Chile tomorrow?
We are. We're off to Chile tomorrow, unfortunately.
Yeah, off to Chile tomorrow.
Fortunately, Dr. Lupker will be here. We're grateful for that.
Ah, covering the home front there. Well, very good.
Plan.
We've actually, you know, about half of our practice is telephone consultation anyway. And between going to India and various things, we've kind of trained our patients and our staff that even when we're away periodically, you know, we still check in by email every couple of days. And so you can, you know, telecommuting takes on new possibilities, I would say.
I don't know how I could handle all of my phone patients these days if it wasn't for the availability of email, because I as well have so many patients from far from where I am in Pennsylvania here, from the surrounding states, and if it wasn't for the phone and email, I wouldn't be able to handle as many people as want to work with homeopathy that I do.
We're actually about to start doing video conferencing with our patients, and so that means that it wouldn't be much different, you know, if we were in Edmonds, Washington, or Pucón, Chile. You know, in other words, you could pretty much do it the same. So we're going to be doing some experimenting.
And is that going to be available through your website? Is that one way that people will be accessing that?
It'll be available through our office. In other words, we're going to be, to be able to treat patients that way. You know, we already do phone consultations, but we'll be able to see them, and they'll be able to see us.
But in terms of letting people know about that, one way would be maybe through your website, healthyhomeopathy.com.
Well, yeah,
just so that people have
also,
a way of...
Yes, definitely, sure. And people can also access our website at www.drugfreeasperger.com as well.
All right, so just, again, I just want to reiterate that it's my pleasure to have you folks on the call this evening, all three of you, and just really looking forward to getting into our discussion this evening. And I know that you mentioned in your new book here a drug-free approach to Asperger's syndrome and autism, that homeopathy is particularly suited to these children. And I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about why you think that is.
Yeah, Greg, I think that that's very true. And in fact, I think homeopathy is really an ideal form of medicine for this condition. And I was at an autism conference recently, the Autism Society of Washington, and a psychologist there referred to this condition as a neurocognitive developmental disorder. And that's a mouthful, and I don't use that term too frequently, but what it really speaks to, I think, is that this is a condition that really has a global impact on a child's ability to function. And because it has such a global impact on their functioning, I think that it really requires an approach that individualizes treatment and that addresses the totality. And what better form of medicine than homeopathy to do that? You know, these children really struggle in a lot of different ways. Their social interactions are hampered. They have difficulty with communication. Often they have sensory processing issues, and for example, the flushing of a toilet, they may run out of the bathroom because the sound of the toilet flushing is so painful on their ears that they just can't tolerate it. And additionally, you know, two-thirds of these of children with autism spectrum disorder have a dual diagnosis. And, for example, 80% have a diagnosis of anxiety, 20% have Tourette's, and 44% have ADHD. So it's a really complex disorder. And where homeopathy really shines is in its individualization of treatment, whereas, you know, with conventional medicine, a child psychiatrist would just sort of portion out the child and start throwing Neurontin at them for a behavioral issue, some Paxil for their depression and anxiety, maybe some Concerta for their ADHD, and some Tenex for their tics. And, you know, this is where homeopathy really, really does a great job with this condition.
I was thinking it might be useful in the beginning, and by the way, that was Dr. Ian Lupker that was speaking just then. But Judith, I was hoping that maybe you could give us a brief description, distinction of the Asperger aspect within the autism field, so to speak, and just so that everybody's to the same page as far as that goes.
Gregory, Judith is offline at the moment, so I'm going to answer that question for you. Okay,
great. That's Dr. Robert Allman there that's speaking.
Sure. So the Asperger part of the spectrum is at the high-functioning end, and it usually is differentiated from high-functioning autism because they don't have any significant speech delay, which you usually see in high-functioning autism. And there are peculiarities in Asperger children in which they often have a very strong special interest in, say, trains or jet fighter planes or all the words in the dictionary. It can just be anything. It doesn't have to be any particular thing, but they're very, very pedantic about this interest, and they will know every little thing about it. And they will talk to people for hours about it without any prompting from the other person or any even evidence of interest on the other person's behalf. And so that's probably one of the striking features. You usually find very poor social skills or just an inability to understand why other people are giving and receiving social cues. They just don't get social cues, and in some cases, they don't even get that other people think differently than they do. They may think that the other person only has the same kind of thoughts that they do, and so would, of course, be interested in the same kinds of things. So I hope that's a good capsule summary of Asperger's.
And so do you think that these children in particular within the autism spectrum are the most likely to benefit from homeopathic care, or would there also be other children within this category of autism or autism spectrum?
Yeah, it's possible to treat the whole spectrum. That the main issue really is to find the individualizing symptom. And so at the lower end of the spectrum, so to speak, what we call the lower functioning end of the spectrum, you have to have a very good observant parent in order to really get a case that carries enough peculiarities with it to find the homeopathic medicine. On the higher end of the spectrum, where the children are verbal, then it's much easier to get them talking about their special interests, get them talking about their schoolmates, their daily life in such a way that you can pick up the peculiarities much like you do with any patient and are able to prescribe much more on the basis of the child and not just on what the observant parent says. If you don't have a parent who's observed their child at all, it's very, very difficult to get the case.
So then under those circumstances, because certainly I've seen that in my own work, that you do have the situations where the parent or the caregiver is not that observing, at least from a homeopathic point of view, and though you can observe the child in the office, that's obviously an artificial situation. Are there certain fallbacks that you go to in terms of certain tools or methods that you use to glean more information under those circumstances?
Well, basically you try to tune the parent in to what you need to know about the child. And even if they don't know it yet, if necessary, you can have them observe it further and then get back to you about it. So sometimes the peculiarities the parent hasn't observed, and you just have to tune them into what you need, and then it's better.
So then there's some training effort that needs to go in there.
Most of the time, you have to realize that the parents of kids on the autism spectrum are generally better historians than the parents of ADHD kids, although that's not universally true. But basically, these parents are very highly motivated. And they've been observing their kids very closely, mostly. And oftentimes, they've told the story of their child to a number of different practitioners by this time. So though they may not be into the homeopathic end of it yet, they very quickly adapt.
So, Ian, you had, in your intro earlier here, you happened to mention that there's an overlap of diagnoses with these children in terms of,
that's right.
Percent, where there's other diagnoses that are in addition to the Asperger's. And so within that context, as you said, very complex cases, is there a certain pattern of symptoms in terms of what that tell you if certain symptoms change initially or within the first period of time, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, that really shows you from experience that, that you are on the right track? In other words, what kinds of symptoms do you mostly, that you think are most likely to improve within what time frame?
Actually, you know what? We kind of have these divvied up. So I think I'm going to go ahead and answer that question.
Okay.
Is that all right?
That's fine.
We kind of agreed ahead of time who would answer which questions.
Ah.
Okay. Okay, so as far as in the book we talk about which symptoms are highly likely to improve, which will probably get better, and where you might see possible changes. And in terms of the time frame, it's not so different from with other cases. In other words, we usually schedule the first visit 6 weeks after the child has begun the homeopathic medicine, right? And so you might see, some people, of course, see changes within days. But I would say at least within a matter of weeks, a few weeks, we begin to see these changes. And by that 5 or 6 week point, the symptoms should have, I'd say, stabilized by that point. Symptoms like restlessness, mood changes, the concentration problems, school performance, oppositional behavior, hypersensitivity, confidence, awkwardness in interpersonal kinds of relationships, social isolation, obsessive behavior, and the participation in team sports, those are symptoms that we expect to improve to a great degree. Symptoms that will probably get better are the self-stimming, which is really big with these children, pickiness, the eye contact, and this is very rewarding to see an improvement in the eye contact, perseveration, learning disabilities, the hyper-focus on special interests, which can be very off-putting to other children. That we've seen, at least the verbalization, improve quite a bit. Encopresis, or bowel impaction, the echolalia, or mimicking, and bedwetting. And I would say that in the category of you may see changes, and this is a bit on the lower end of the spectrum, the developmental delays, the speech inability to speak, the lack of empathy, and what's called pedantic speech. So that is kind of the array of what we're likely to see improve.
And within that context, in terms of what you've seen, is it often the case that these children are on concurrently prescription meds when they start homeopathic care?
I would say that varies. Some are, and yeah, I mean, 66% of children with AS are on conventional medication. And I think, you know, the parents who tend towards wanting to treat their children homeopathically are less warm on conventional medication. So I would say that percentage is lower with the children that we see. But, we do see children that are concurrently on conventional psychopharmacologic medication while seeking homeopathic treatment. And we, you know, we try to meet parents where they're at with that. I think that, you know, these parents work really hard to just try to find the best treatment. They just want the best for their children. And a lot of parents will bring their children in, and they're doing, you know, multiple therapies. They're trying the DAN protocol, or they're doing some chiropractic work, or they've got their child on glutathione, they're trying different dietary interventions. And this is actually, you know, one of the biggest challenges with treating these children is that because there's been such an emphasis on early intervention, you know, parents are really leaving no stone unturned in seeking out treatment for their children. And it can make it difficult at times to, you know, to treat these children because there are so many interventions happening simultaneously. And what we generally recommend, we get this question all the time, but what we generally recommend is that, you know, it's okay if the child comes to us on the DAN protocol, for example, but they should be on it for at least 2 months before commencing homeopathic treatment. Because, you know, we really want we want them stabilized on the DAN protocol. We want to know what's changed with them on that protocol so that we're not mixing interventions at the same time, because that really mucks the picture.
You might want to mention what that is just briefly so that people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it involves chelation primarily, and, you know, there's a theory and that's very popular right now within the autism community, and I think that there's a lot of validity to it when you look at the data and research. That mercury, particularly in thimerosal, in vaccinations, potentially could be a trigger for autism. And so, you know, there's environmental doctors that are doing chelation using DMFA and DMPS and other chelating substances, both transdermally and IV, that bind the heavy metals and help the body to excrete them. And one issue that comes up is that it's hard to kind of monitor how quickly the body dumps these heavy metals. And so children can get symptomatic sometimes when the mercury is being dumped quickly.
And so then I would assume that would present another challenge in terms of treating these kids.
And that's why we really emphasize that, you know, whatever intervention you try, it's good to have the child stabilized for 2 months or longer before introducing homeopathy, so we just know what their baseline is.
And in terms of some of the meds, prescription meds that might be affecting how they express themselves, their mental state, their emotional state, and then trying to observe or get the information from these children about these children in terms of behavior and what they do, how much of a factor is the prescription medicine that they might be on? I mean, you mentioned earlier they might be on Neurontin or Prozac or whatever the case may be. How much of that do you feel impacts and really, you know, is a big challenge for working with these kids?
Oh, I mean, I think that's a huge challenge. I think, you know, it's important to be aware of the potential side effects of each of these medications. And I think that's why, I mean, that's in part why Bob Judas and I got into this somewhat subspecialization of homeopathic child psychiatry, is because we each had such extensive psychiatric backgrounds that, you know, we're very familiar with the psychopharmacological treatment that's out there and what kinds of effects these drugs have on a child's affect, on their sleep, on, you know, on their GI. So, I mean, that's really important, like knowing what other interventions are being used to try to keep track of, you need to keep track of that in order to figure out whether the remedy is working or not.
So are there compatibility issues then with, you know, the whether it's the pharmaceutical interventions or even some of the, you know, the nutritional or other interventions between those interventions and then the homeopathic treatment?
Well, there are potentially some interactions. There are potentially some things that could perhaps stop the action of the homeopathic medicine. Usually if children are on many interventions, I'll tend to use LM potencies with them, mm-hmm. which are less easily interfered with. And oftentimes that's worked pretty well. The main issue is really what's doing what. And can you determine, has the homeopathic medicine had an action in the face of all the things that are also being done? And especially if those other treatments have side effects, then it can get very confusing. And I think one of the most important things is if parents have not started some new intervention that they're hot to do, I generally ask them to postpone it in order to at least have a clear 6 weeks as much as possible that I can tell what the correct medicine is from the homeopathic point of view. I was going to say most of the interventions that are being done, I think the one that probably has the greatest potential for confusion in the issue is chelation. And although chelation may be effective and may be helpful in removing mercury from the system, it can also be a two-edged sword and stir up symptoms that are coming from the mercury circulating in the body. You know, that's not to say that those things shouldn't be done. It's just that there's a sequence to understand what's happening. You know, both for the doctor who's doing the chelation to know that his treatment's being effective and the homeopath to know that our treatment is being effective.
With these challenges that you folks have been talking about in terms of whether it's the various interventions that are being done or just the nature of working with this subspecialty, as Ian mentioned, are there tips that you have or that you think of in terms of helping these children the most that you can with homeopathy? Are there some things you can say, suggestions you can make along those lines in terms of advice to practitioners when they're dealing with these kids?
You know, I think this calls to mind, you know, Judith heard a psychologist speak recently from the UK, a man named John Ortiz, and he was joking about how his PhD was no good in helping him to treat children on the autism spectrum. He said what people need to treat this population is the Zen degree, flexibility. And, you know, and I think that that is very true, particularly as a homeopath, because you're not, you know, one size isn't going to fit all with your case-taking approach with these children. They've got varying communication styles, and you've really got to tailor your case-taking to the way that they communicate with you. And, you know, for example, children with Asperger syndrome and who are on the autism continuum often can be very literal. And so, you know, using a technique like Divya Chabra's free association isn't going to fly with a very literal patient. And so I think that flexibility is really the key in getting a good case from these children.
So what about the situation where actually that you have a child who's completely nonverbal, and, you know, of course your, you know, your challenge is to find a simulant for that child. How do you go about doing that?
I think that's one of the most challenging aspects of treating these children, and really requires a lot of creativity. I think, as was mentioned earlier, these parents are often brilliant. I mean, they are such keen observers of their children, and they have often kept quite a meticulous history of immunizations and other things, and I think that's when observational skills are very, very important, just to notice the gestures of the child, and just, you know, that really taps into the keen observing powers, I would say, that we're all called upon to use. And just everything that the parents can tell you about, all about birth history, a lot of these kids, I guess less so with this population, but they can, sometimes they're adopted children as well. So any information, any and all information, details as far as acute illnesses or chronic illnesses, whatever is possible is what we use. And I really agree with Dr. Lupker that about flexibility.
So I want to take a moment here for those of the listeners that might have joined us late, that this evening a couple of changes here in that Kimalia is off to his daughter's high school graduation. So the voice you hear is that of myself, Gregory Pace. And we're interviewing this evening Dr. Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, who just spoke, Dr. Robert Ullman, who spoke just before her, and Dr. Ian Lupker, who spoke a couple of minutes ago. And we've been mostly discussing the treatment of children diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome and within the general category of autism spectrum. So that something else that I wanted to... We don't have a lot of time.
Oh, Gregory, I just wanted to say, you know, the name of our new book, in case somebody is just
Yes, thank you, Judith.
It's called A Drug-Free Approach to Asperger's Syndrome and Autism, Homeopathic Care for Exceptional Kids. It's by myself, Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, Robert Ullman, and Ian Lupker, all NDs. And our website is drugfreeasperger.com. And I want to give a phone number, too, in case people want to reach us. It's 425-774-5599.
Thanks, Judith. I'm sure there's a lot of people that want that information.
Thanks.
So one area that I know, in particular, Robert and Judith and you as well, Ian, that you use in your work is the understanding that you have of the kingdoms. And how they enter into, you know, working with and choosing the simulum. And I'm hoping that you can give us some sort of, again, brief encapsulation of how you go about doing that.
I think this is where Rajan Sankaran's information has just has really been invaluable for us, and I mean other people as well, but particularly Rajan. And it's many of these children who are very literal and very, very structured, and they may need mineral remedies. And I think a combination of Jan Skolten's work and Rajan, you know, they both have basically the periodic table kind of grids, and Rajan has really kind of enriched what is available from Jan. And so very specifically, whether you're dealing with issues of security, issues of identity, issues of responsibility, creativity, et cetera, separation, it's possible to really hone in on which remedy, which column, which row, and it's really very, very exciting. And so that's what I would say is very helpful for us as far as the mineral kingdom. Animals are fascinating. One of my favorite cases, I know I presented at the NCH, is the case in the book, which is a falcon case, and it looked very, very much like stramonium or lysine, and but the main feeling of that child was not wanting to be restrained, which is very classic for falcons. And that child is, I just did a follow-up. The whole family, actually, the mother and the sister have been on Falcon. It's been very helpful for this child. I think I've had him on Falcon for 4 years now, and he talks about peregrine falcon being his favorite animal. And I think it's really important in animal cases that it will be obvious a child needs an animal medicine if issues start coming up with, like, attractiveness and survival and competition and those kinds of issues. But it will be the terminology which will sound like an animal. You know, they'll talk about predator and that type of thing. It's very important not to lead a child in that direction, nor to lead a child to, not to say what's your favorite animal, that type of thing, but instead to really allow it to be elucidated by the child. And this kind of thing is very, very difficult in nonverbal children, and you're probably not going to prescribe these remedies so much in these kids. But it's really beautiful when it comes out. And plants, of course, we're talking about those very, very hypersensitive children who are sensitive to so many different things. And it's important to understand what is their sensitivity. Some of these kids may seem to be globally sensitive, but to understand more in which way they're sensitive, that will point to different plant families. And we've had some fascinating cases that way as well. And to me, thinking along these lines really expands the repertoire of what remedies are possible. So we're not just looking at Polycrest possibilities, but we're just, I think all of us now are using so many more medicines, and I know there is a controversy about provings, not provings, et cetera, but I will say that I have had quite a bit of success on occasion, even from medicines that have not been proven. I think we have a lot yet to learn. So my advice is to follow the lead of the patient. Don't have in mind any narrow idea. I've seen children like this before. They need such and such. But really be open, be flexible as to any medicine, any substance in nature really being a possible prescription.
So in the situation that you mentioned, Judith, where there may not be a classical proven for a particular remedy, what do you tend to rely upon to make that selection? Is it, you know, clinical experience? Is it knowing, having heard other cases where that remedy was used? I mean, what do you use to, you know, to guide you in that perhaps less clarified water, so to speak?
You know, sometimes it may be hearing other cases, but there's two areas. One area is new provings, right? Provings, you know, such as Falcon, for example, provings where there's excellent. Some of the new provings have much, much more, detailed body of knowledge than the older provings. But when there's no proving available, I'm relying on the method mainly that we learned from Rajan to just keep going into the sensation of the chief complaint. And in those cases, it's really from the words of the patient. The patient, it's a method more recently that Rajan's method, has really taught us to let the patient tell you what he or she needs. And, I mean, sometimes that method is brilliant, and other times you're going to rely on the repertory, you're going to rely on a list of symptoms. But you're always looking for what's unusual about the person, unusual about the child. These kids with Asperger's are so unusual to begin with, but if you're going to rely on the fact that the child has echolalia and repeats everything mimics, if you're going to use the rubric mimics, many, many children do that, and that may not be unusual, an unusual enough symptom to find the right remedy for that child.
So I'm hoping in the couple of minutes that we have here before we switch over to letting everyone else ask questions, if there might be one case that one of you might want to share, just, you know, perhaps a recent one or something striking that, you could give us a bit of information about in just, two or three minutes here.
I think I'll let Bob do that, and since I've been talking about the unusual remedies, I think he was thinking of presenting a great case of a polycrest remedy.
So I call this case the boy who could do cube roots in his head. And he was what you might call a math savant, and very autistic. He was diagnosed with semantic pragmatic disorder, which is actually a speech and language version of autism. But what I found most unique about him was that he was incredibly obsessed with mathematics, but. Otherwise, very little verbal interaction with anyone. He just wasn't interested in other people. He didn't speak until quite late. I saw him when he was 5 years old. And he would have very rigid moments where he would chant ee or ah, and just embarrass the heck out of his parents. And when I interviewed him, really the only time I could get anywhere was when I talked about mathematics, and we got into it, and he showed me how to figure out the cube root of 729, which he could do in his head. And so it seemed as though he had been vaccine damaged, and because although he had some autistic features really from birth, and he didn't look at his mother when he was born, and really he didn't make good eye contact for the first 15 months of his life, but at 15 months he suffered a high fever immediately after his MMR vaccine, and he got much worse. And then he just continued to deteriorate in some ways. And actually his parents had gotten the most gains before homeopathy by using the Sunrise program. It's a very, very intensive program of entering into the child's world. And so I considered remedies for vaccine damage at the time. This was fairly early in treating autistic children for me. And I also had a recent case before that of a boy with not quite this level of mathematical ability, but some unusually precocious mathematical ability and a pretty disposition to counting, who's also in our book, and also got the remedy silica. And so with the combination of those two factors, I gave him silica, and he responded remarkably well. And although he actually lost some of his ability and interest in mathematics, his world expanded quite a bit. And one report from his parents after 2 years was that he's improving so much. Recently he began speaking about numbers again, but he's now keen to include others in the discussions. He's a lot more interactive. You simply would not recognize him. His language was age appropriate, and he's very interested in having friends. and relating to other people, and actually chooses to be interactive 75% of the time. He no longer made noises. He didn't have echolalia. And it was just a really remarkably good result over time.
I want to say one thing, and that is we as homeopaths, Gregory, I know you know this too, we see amazing changes a lot of times in our patients. And one of the interesting obstacles that we met in writing this book and publishing this book was actually running up against people who didn't believe that children could do so well without drugs and with homeopathy, and just that children on the autism spectrum could change so much. So it's, I mean, as you know and as we know, it's possible, and that's why we're homeopaths.
And that's really a great case as well to kind of demonstrate that. Maybe this would be a good time again, Judith, if you just want to mention again the new book title and the ways in which anybody listening could get in touch with you folks.
Sure. It's A Drug-Free Approach to Asperger Syndrome and Autism, Homeopathic Care for Exceptional Kids, Picnic Point Press. It's about 300 pages, so I think we have 18 cases in here, I believe. It's by myself, Judith Reichenberg-Ullman, Robert Ullman, and Ian Lubker. And you can reach us at 425-774-5599 in the U.S. And our website is www.drugfreeasperger.com. And I think you'll enjoy the foreword. It's quite a vitriolic foreword, I would say, by Bernard Rimland, who is probably the father of autism, the treatment of autism in the U.S.
Great. Thanks, Judith. I'm going to unmute the call now so that those that want to ask some questions can ask some questions here. So just a moment. All right. Are there any questions for Dr. Reichenberg-Ullman, Dr. Ullman, or Dr. Lufker?
Do we take any constitutional aspect in it, like child's personality and all that, which is a changed personality, of course? Do we take that into consideration?
Of course. We certainly look into the child's personality. And, of course, we're looking for the most unique characteristics.
Yeah, we want to know
state which developed due to autism or the vaccine damage.
Say that again. What's your question, please?
Yes. Is it a state which developed due to vaccine damage or due to... Is it usually due to vaccine damage?
You know, it's a very, very controversial question, and we have seen children, I would say a minority of children, who very clearly, one day they're well, and then it's very clear after immunizations that they're not. But it's a multifactorial kind of condition. It's true that the numbers, the incidence of children with autism has grown tremendously at the same time that the number of thimerosal-containing immunizations has increased. And it is true, for example, in Denmark, where they banned thimerosal a number of years ago, still there's only one autistic child among 1,300. In the U.S. and Britain, both of which have used thimerosal-containing immunizations, it's one in 166. So we think that really is a factor, but there are other factors as well. I've seen children who are very clearly autistic off after antibiotics, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think there's been some recent information about Augmentum and autism. But I don't think we can say by any means that it's only due to immunizations, but it certainly seems to be a very important factor.
But I'm having a very interesting case. That is histiocytosis, and the child is after MMR.
Sure.
And that child, but he's responding very well to calcium because his diabetes insipidus is the main feature.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he's doing so well on this calcium, but what happened, he was given rather calcium initially by other homeopaths in 6C, potency. So I increased the potency to C30, C200, but then he was not reacting properly. He was getting aggravation or something. So I gave LM potencies of CalCarb, LM01. But he is doing, improving much better because his lymph glands are not increasing anymore. The diabetes insipidus is getting better. But that is due to MMR.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you're mentioning I think is really important. These children can have a lot of physical problems as well. I mean, they can have seizures, they can have a variety of problems, and so they can be quite challenging to treat from a physical standpoint as well, but that's wonderful that you're having success.
But there's no autistic feature in this child. It's just that his lymph glands, and they started chemotherapy even.
Ah, well, that's great.
Any other questions that someone else might want to ask? So I'm going to actually take this opportunity to ask another question here, which is actually just related to what was just being talked about, in that oftentimes there are physical symptoms that go along with the mental-emotional symptoms, and sometimes these may be of a different order in terms of there may be eczema or acne or, you know, something along those lines. And do you find in these cases where perhaps something more superficial, physical symptoms are up, that it's a barrier when perhaps the parents are very concerned about the skin quality on the face or something else that may be relatively superficial, perhaps allergy symptoms that happen at certain times of the year, and their focus is, you know, on doing something about that, where, you know, of course we're looking perhaps to see change at a deeper level? Or is that issue not really come up that much with the treatment of these kids?
Bob, do you want to answer that?
Bob didn't hear the question.
Ian, do you want to answer that?
Well, you know, this is a good question. I've been reflecting on this and with my own cases of ASD, and there's been a general trend where there really hasn't been, and this follows, you know, Herring's Law to a degree, but there really hasn't been a lot of physical symptomatology with these children. And I know I've had a few cases where after I've begun treatment with them, some of their communication has improved, their eye contact, social interaction, and they start getting eczema behind their knees. And so I certainly have seen that. And I think that, you know, it makes sense in terms of homeopathic philosophy that I think that Asperger's syndrome is a fairly deep pathology. I mean, it's a neurological condition. And so it makes sense that we're not going to see a lot of physical symptomatology, at least at first.
But I think as far as the parents' objectives, I think these are very savvy parents. We just spoke at an Autism One conference in Chicago, and the room, you know, the room there was filled with parents who were just, boy, very up on all the latest that's happening, you know, as far as treatment and autism. And I think they're very appropriate as far as their priorities. I don't think that they're superficially concerned.
Yeah, I would agree.
And do you find that, in general, that's true of these parents? I mean, I realize that's a generalization, but that there is that awareness and commitment to, you know, to what you're trying to do, specifically in relationship to homeopathy, or is that a hurdle that you have to jump over like you do with other patients that come to see you and they don't necessarily know what homeopathy is really about?
I think that's where I think hopefully this book will come in. I think as far as the autism community, I think that they know very little about homeopathy. I think there's a growing presence. I think on the, Dr. Lepker was mentioning recently that there's been more of a presence on the website, you know, in the chat rooms, et cetera. I think greatly due to Amy Lansky's book, and hopefully now more people using homeopathy for their kids with ASD, and hopefully our book too. And so these parents are very open to embracing whatever is possible for their children. I think that we just need to put homeopathy on their radar.
And I know that's what you and Bob have been doing for years with all the articles and all the books.
Right, and now I think it's time to do that for this group of children, because they're fascinating children. They are so in need of our help. And conventional medicine, I think, has relatively little to offer them in compared to with kids with ADHD. 70% of the kids do respond to stimulant treatment. Now, parents may or may not want to do that, and we have really good results as to other homeopaths with homeopathy. But with this population of children, I think public health to a large degree is maybe what got them in this situation to begin with, the best intentions, but not adding up the mercury. And I think that, and I don't think conventional medicine has as much to offer them as we do, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I think that this is a condition that homeopathy has an enormous amount to offer. And you think about some of the other therapies that are out there, applied behavioral analysis. I mean, we're talking 40 hours a week of behavioral psychology going
on. Thousands of dollars.
Thousands of dollars. And, you know, interventions that are really very invasive. And in terms of being a non-invasive, very safe, very effective type of medicine, I mean, homeopathy just has an enormous amount to offer these children.
Well, again, I want to thank Dr. Ian Lupker and Dr. Judith Reichenberg-Ullman and Dr. Robert Ullman for being on the call tonight and talking about this really very important subject. And I enjoyed the interview tonight very much so. And I encourage everyone to look for their new book, A Drug-Free Approach to Asperger's Syndrome and Autism, Homeopathic Care for Exceptional Kids. You can go to the Whole Health Now website, the books section, and find it there. And just want to thank you all again for joining us this evening.
We'd love feedback, too.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say, is that if people would like to send, besides the website, is there another way for people to get a hold of you, the website and the phone number, or is that best way?
www.drugfreeasperger.com, 425-774-5599. You know, when you write books, you kind of put them out there. And what really is rewarding is when we hear kids who were treated who did really great because of some case that someone read in a book, or we just love to hear about your cases anyway with these children. So please do communicate with us.
Your telephone number again?
425-774-5599.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening. It was great.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye.